All right, this is where I'm supposed to briefly qualify. My name's Angel. I am an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is November 13, 1988, and that's by the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I always say I was a wino junkie from the streets of Brooklyn, and I came here, and y'all taught me how to become a productive member of society. And through Alcoholics Anonymous, through working the steps, through having a caring and powerful God in my life, I haven't found it necessary to drink in over 22 years. It's nothing but I just followed a few simple directions as was handed down to me by somebody who had them and somebody who went through the book. And I don't like to qualify too much because I want to give all, speak all the time I can. I could tell you that he's one of those gentlemen that I seek spiritual guidance from when I need questions answered. He's somebody who's been here since I've been here. He's got some time under his belt. But it's the quality of his sobriety that I admire the most. And I always look for people who talk about the solution, not the people who want to continually go over the problem. And he's one of those people. So I'm going to introduce Jack G. Yay.
Hi, I'm Jack. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to see a lot of familiar faces here tonight. Seeing Angel left me all this time, I guess I gotta get started. First off, my sobriety date is February the 14th, 1975. That's the good news. The bad news is I arrived here in August of 1965. How I ended up coming to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, which I thought was the worst thing that ever happened to me, was I grew up in Boston. When I was 17, I left and joined the Marine Corps, and my drinking really got out of hand while I was in there. I had some good opportunities, and I made weight, and I lost weight. It seems like I did my job well, but when you gave me liberty and a little booze, everything went to hell. And I had planned on making a career, but when my hitch was up, I figured I better get out of here because I just knew something bad was going to happen, and this wasn't a place to be. So I left the Marine Corps. My parents had moved from one town to another, and I didn't know anybody in this town, so I started making the rounds at the bar rooms, because that's the only thing I knew. The first time I got drunk when I was about 15, I came home drunk, and, I got up the next morning. My mother was pissed. She just about locked me in the bedroom, but I got up the next morning, and I was sick. You know what we're talking about here. And I knew, I don't know where this came from, I must have been born an alcoholic. I knew if I could get some more of that stuff to drink, I would be all right. And unfortunately, I couldn't, so I suffered through it. But I learned at an early age that you wake up in the morning with a hangover, I knew what to do. I drank around the clock, and I tried to function. I learned to trade, have a job, got married, had children, but apparently drinking was number one in my life because all these things disappeared on me. I got married in 62, I guess, and I had had one, we used to call them DUIs up in Boston area, driving while under the influence, I think it was. I lost my license maybe in 1960, and then again I lost it a short time later for the same thing, I had a kind of a bad attitude, a bad outlook on things, so I just paid somebody to get my license back. That's how I went about it, but when I was in court on my second DUI, the judge called me up to the bench, and he was a judge. He grew up with all my father and my uncles and all that, same neighborhood. He called me up to the bench and he says, are you Buddy Griffin's son? I said, yes. He says, I suggest you go to Alcoholics Anonymous because I know your whole family. There's a lot of alcoholism there. And, so I thought that was, you know, the way I interpreted that, when I left the courtroom, I went down to the West End Grill, which is around the corner, and started telling everybody what the judge had just told me. But a few years later, my wife decided to leave me for good reasons. I wasn't expecting this. You know, I was acting like a clown. I was, you know, not a good husband, not a good father. But it was kind of a shock. And I said, you know, I got to do something here. So I went to AA. Didn't have any idea what it was all about. Got all dressed up, went to a meeting. And I was the youngest person there. And I almost left. It was up in Medford, Mass. It was in a Catholic church in a hall. They had these humongous signs, but for the grace of God. Anybody from that area, you'll know what I'm talking about. The size of that bulletin board, solid blue with big gold letters about that big. And, you know, I said, what the hell is it? And a priest came over to me. And I figured it was his parish and he was the head dog. But what it was, he was an alcoholic. He was one of us. Well, he kept me in the room, and then I met a few people, and I kept going to meetings. But I was there for the wrong reasons. I knew as soon as this situation with the impending divorce and all this settled down, that I'd drink again. I knew it. And after about 9 months, the divorce went through, and she met another guy, married another guy, and of course, I didn't take that too well, So I started drinking, and I remember how he did it. I was sober 9 months in AA. I really wasn't doing anything much more than not drinking and going to meetings. I wasn't reading any literature. I wasn't talking about the solution with anybody. So I decided to take a day off from AA and go to a ball game. It was a doubleheader at Fenway Park. And I got to about the fourth inning of the first game and started drinking. Didn't even stick around for the rest of that game. And that started a pattern that I was to follow for the next several years. In and out. And took the geographical cures, you know, went all over the country. And went out to California to start a new life with another alcoholic buddy of mine. And we swore, we both went to AA, we were not going to drink. We got from Boston to Hartford, Connecticut. If you look at the map, it's not too far. And we started drinking. And we worked our way all the way across to L.A. And we couldn't hold on to a reasonable job. We were working for day labor pools. Finally, we went down the dock. We were unloading freight trains. And we did that for a while, but we couldn't show up for work every day. Somehow we got separated. To this day, I don't know whatever happened to him, but I ended up coming back to Boston, and all the way back, I was driving cross country. Excuse me. Thinking I'm going to go back to Boston, straight my life out. And I went to see a friend of mine from AA, and she ran this rooming house. She gave me a little small apartment. And she says, you don't have to pay any rent until you get back on your feet and start working again. And I got a job right away. I worked in a printing trade, so I could always pick up a job. But I met wife number two there while I was living there. Now, here's how a pattern of alcoholism will go if you're a true alcoholic. I didn't want to drink anymore. It was the first time I didn't want to drink. But I didn't know how seriously I meant that. But I knew that drinking to me just didn't mix anymore. And I was probably in my late 20s. I went to meetings every day for 3 months. I met this young lady. We get married. And I stopped going to meetings. And this will happen to any alcoholic that, you know, has got the mind that I have. I remember one morning, everything was going fine in this marriage. I get up to go to work, I'm tying my shoes, and a little guy back here said, "Shit, you ain't had a drink in 13 months." You know? And you know where I went with that one. By the end of the day, I stopped at a place, and I had one bottle of beer. I went right home. You know, shit, things are looking good. And the next day, I went in the same bar. I couldn't wait to get out of work, by the way, so I could make this list. I got another bottle of beer, and I had a little shooter with it. And third day was payday, and you know the rest of the story. I went in there and closed the place up. And well, my drinking contributed to the end of that marriage also. Now, I tried going back to AA a few times, but I was never serious. Anybody got real seriously talking about the solution to me, I got away from it in a hurry. But what happened was I hadn't been to a meeting in quite a while. And one night I was drinking in a bar, and I said, maybe I ought to go back to AA. So I was half-gassed. I went to this meeting, and I wasn't disruptive or anything. I just sat there and listened, and then I never went back to another meeting. And this was in 1974. I was a pretty violent person when I drank. I went from a quiet, introverted guy to a maniac when I drank. And I didn't understand that. But what happened to me was I ended up in jail. I had a pretty heavy charge on me. And I don't really to this day understand everything that happened. But I was up in a county jail, and they had me in a 23-hour lockup, and you get a lot of time to think. And one of the thoughts I had was, Jesus, maybe those people in AA were right. You know, that, maybe I should have stopped drinking. And, well, I stayed there almost 4 months, and I kept going back into court, and they wouldn't give me a bail. So finally I changed lawyers and went back in, and I got awarded the bail. I got out that night, and I was at a bar room. Actually, it wasn't a bar room. My cousin picked me up, and we used to call them package stores up there. I said, stop at the first package store you see. And he said, Jack, you're crazy. You can't be. And I said, I'm just going to get a six-pack. I said, we'll split it. He had one, I had five by the time we got home. And I had no place to go. I was going home to live with my mother. I'm 36 years old, and 35, 36, and I said, geez, I'm living with my mother. You know, but she bailed me out. So, you know, and all she says is, Jack, get your life together and don't drink. Well, I couldn't keep that. I couldn't follow that. I came home a couple of days later. I don't remember much about it, but I tripped over a coffee table. I ended up on a couch, and I woke up in the morning. My sister was there yelling at me. My mother had called her up, and I just felt lousy. I wanted to get a drink, so I said, look, take her for a ride. When you get back, I won't be here. And I took off. And I went back down to where I drank. And a fellow named Marty, I can't mention his last name, he's no longer with us, Marty O'Brien, he and I had drank together on numerous occasions. We used to go to AA together and go out and drink afterwards. And I remember one day we were in this place called the Center Grill, and it was a bar, but there was no seats. You stood up at the bar, and it was a big round thing. And Marty and I, there, and Marty's got the money. I'm broke. So Marty's just settled an insurance case, and he's throwing money up on the bar. And there's no way I'm leaving as long as he's got money. And you know, finally about 7:30, he says, "Come on, let's go to the 8 o'clock meeting." I said, "I'm not leaving here. Are you kidding me?" So he left some money in the bar, and he told the bartender, "Keep pouring. I'll be back." And he came back and told me what a great meeting it was, and I thought, you know, last place in the world I wanted to go. But that's the guy that saved my life. That's the guy that approached me. I had just gotten out of the jail, and he heard I was in town, and he came up to me and started talking to me, and he says, "Why don't you come to a meeting with me, Jack?" I said, "Nah, it's too late for that." I said, "You know what they're charging me with?" I said, you know, I'm going away for a long time, you know. I'm just going to make, enjoy it while I'm out here. And make a long story short, Marty took me to a meeting. I went to the meeting. Haven't had a drink since. What happened? I'll tell you what happened. Grace of God came into my life that night, you know. And in my opinion only, it's not a sponsor, it's not the big book, it's the grace of God to get you sober. You know, those other things can help you stay sober. But that's what happened in my case, because I never expected the next day when Marty was going to another, I stayed with him at his house that night. The next day, we went to a noontime meeting. That night, we went to another meeting. This became a pattern. And, you know, he got me involved in big book groups. Incidentally, I didn't have a sponsor when I got sober. I got into a big book group up there. There's a bunch of old-timers that had watched me over the years slipping and sliding and all that. And they kind of took me under their wing, and each gave me some guidance and got me through the steps. I got involved in a 12-step group. Same thing there. And I stayed sober 17 months before I had to go back to court. And I went back to court, and I knew I was going to get some time. And I got convicted of manslaughter. And my lawyer says, first time offense, you're not going to get... The judge gave me 20 years. And actually, it was like one of these split sentences, 15 to 20 years. So they put cuffs on me and took me down to Walpole State Prison. And I don't want to go back to that place, I'll tell you. But they just had riots down there, and the place was a real mess. And it was dirty, filthy. The guys made a mess of it. And I got there, and they signed me to a cell. And I sat down. And you know, I can count. I'm not the smartest person in the world, but I know that I count. 15 to 20, you got to do two-thirds of the minimum. So that's 10 years. I said, holy shit, I can't do 10 years here. You know, and you know something? I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to take anything else. And I mean, there was more drugs floating around that place than you could imagine. You know, because they let it come in because it kept the inmates mellowed out, you know. There were several ways of getting it in. But I had a guard come up to me and say, Griff, he says, this is after I was in that block for a while. He wanted to size me up. He said, I can get you anything you want. And I knew what he was talking about. I said, I just want to get out of here. And, you know, he walked away. But I stayed there almost a year, 11 months, and they transferred me to another place. And while I was there, there was no, where you first go, there's no, you couldn't go to AA meetings. So one day, I mean, these things have happened, or miraculous happened to me. This guy came down to visit me. It's one of these old timers I was talking about that guided me through the big book and the steps. His name was Phil, and he came down to visit me, and he says, Jack, I brought you down the big book. You're going to be here for a while. He says, study it. And he couldn't bring it in and give it to me. They had to check up a contraband and all that, but the next day they'd give it to me. And this place was so secure that you couldn't go anywhere without an escort. And the guy that was bringing me back to my block, he says, who was that guy that was visiting you? And, you know, I didn't want to break his anonymity. I just said he's a friend of mine. And the guy reaches in his pocket and he pulls out an AA medallion. He says, you ever see one of these? I remember it was 8 years. And I said, yeah, I know what that is. So he said, you want a program? I said, yeah, I got sober when I was out in bail. And he said, well, you know, where you're living here, at this end of the prison, you can't go to meetings. I said, I understand that. He says, I'll see what I can do about getting you transferred down the other end of the prison. And I never saw this guy again. Well, within a couple of days, I was down the other end of the prison. So I was able to go to AA meetings. And I got involved there and then, until they transferred me to the other place. And over there, we had three meetings a week. And I met a couple of guys that, this is back in the 70s, they're still sober today. They got sober down there in that group. And when I left that place, I stayed there 2 years. They sent me to a minimum security facility. and I was actually sorry to leave. I mean, I liked it there. I liked the guys. I liked the meetings every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And so I went up to the other place, but how I got there, after 3 years, I got an outside clearance to work outside the wall. And one day I was in a parking lot, and this guy's walking through the parking lot that I went to high school with. And I said, "Hi, Dan, how are you?" He says, "Good." And I figured he's going in to visit somebody. A couple minutes later, a guy came out and called me in. And within the room was my friend Dan, myself, and this guy. And Dan was the warden up at the Concord State Prison, which was the farm, actually. It was a minimum security facility. He said he went to a high school reunion. My name came up, and he didn't even know what was in the prison system. So he came down to check up on my record and talk to me. And he says, "You know," he says, "if you want to come up there, I can get you up there." And he says, "I understand you're involved in AA." I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, we don't have any meetings up there. Can you get some coming in?" So I said, "Yeah, I can do that." So when I get up there, he let me use his phone, and I called the Boston Intergroup, or Boston Central Service, we call it. And they start sending people up. And meanwhile, these guys that were down the other place with me, that were in the program, I got put a good word in for them, and they came up. So we had a nice little group going. And I stayed there another 2 years, you know, and they sent me to work release, stayed there a year, and they released me. I ended up doing 6 years. And now, when I was at work release, I was able to go to meetings outside. And I went every opportunity I got. But they have a practice up there where you get paroled at midnight. So they gave me my papers at midnight, and 1 minute after midnight of the day. And there was a midnight meeting in Boston at the time, so I just shot over to the meeting. And I haven't stopped going to AA since, you know. I mean, I paid the price, and I know what I'm like when I drink, you know. I'm unpredictable, you know. And I know why I drink. You know, I found out what was wrong with me from reading the book Alcoholics Anonymous. When I get restless, irritable, and discontent, I want to drink. I'm not saying that I don't get restless, irritable, and discontent now, but I don't have to drink. I know there's a solution. I know what to do. And, you know, I've been living that way ever since. The big book was a lifesaver for me. You know, that guy, that old guy Phil, he died by the time I got out, but that book he gave me, I wore the covers off it, and I studied it just like he said. You know, I just kept reading, and you know, the most important thing I read in that book was in the section called The Doctor's Opinion, because that told me what was wrong with me. You know, I always thought that I was a nice guy. I drank too much too often, and that wasn't the case. I mean, I was an alcoholic. I had an allergy to alcohol. And when I took a drink, I set up a phenomenon of craving. And from that point onward, after the first drink, I had no control. Alcohol, you know, I take the drink takes me. And it took me to some real bad places. Excuse me. Like I say, I never stopped going to meetings, and I got real active after I got released in a group. And I just settled in there. And I still had some issues, don't get me wrong. Now, I remember this guy telling me that, you know, I had a lot of anger. And this is before I went to court and got my sentence. He said, "You know, you got a lot of anger to deal with." You know, I said, "Yeah, well, I'm going to. Probably going to need that. You know, it's good to have it." So, you know, I hung on to that, but when I got out, I was still an angry young guy. You know, I went a baseball bat under my seat and stuff like that. And, you know, that's not normal. It's, I remember what they were just coming out with bumper stickers. AA was selling these bumper stickers. And one of them said, "Easy does it." And they used to raffle them off at the meeting, and I won one night. And I said, "I can't put this on my car. That'd be a bad representation of Alcoholics Anonymous." I gave it away, and A friend of mine later told me he did the same thing. He had one on, and he ripped it off because he was flipping somebody the bird. You know, I went through that phase of my sobriety where I was angry, just not happy, and I was going to a zillion meetings, and I was reading the book. I was even talking to a sponsor. I got this sponsor finally, and one thing I got from my sponsor, he was the first person I trusted that I could talk to, and I had a boss at work that I wasn't fond of, and he wasn't fond of me, and he was really, you know, I got to the point where, you know, I didn't know how to act or how to react in a calm and loving manner like they have in the liturgy. You know, I was going to react anywhere but that to this guy. And I told my sponsor about it in the conversation. I said, you know, I've had enough of this guy. I'm going to hurt him. And he listened to me. And when I was done, he said, no, you can't do that. If you do that, you're going to pay the price. And if you want to pay the price again, that's up to you. So what he suggested was pray for him. And, you know, I hit the roof. I can't do that. I can't do that. But he convinced me, he says, pray for him for 2 weeks. And then if there's no changes, do whatever you want to do. And, you know, I started praying for him. And it wasn't a very nice prayer. It was just short and sweet, you know, kind of half-assed. But 1 week later, they fired that guy. All right? Now, that made a believer of prayer for me, really. They fired him, and when he was walking out, I shook his hand. You know? And, I mean, I was the happiest guy in the plant. But, you know, so it took me a while to learn things like this. But, you know, I know prayer's the answer. Whenever I'm... in any situation in my life, you know, I say, and the best prayer I know, 3 words, God help me. You know? And that's something my friend Marty suggested to me, too. The first night I met him, when he approached me and took me to the meeting, he told me, he said, Jack, I'm sober 8 months now. And I says, how are you staying sober 8 months? He said, every morning I ask God to keep me away from a drink. So I stayed at his house that night. The next morning, I saw him on his knees in the bedroom. So, you know, I didn't get on my knees, but I sat down and said a little prayer. You know? And I've done that every single day since, because, like I say, I know I'm sober by the grace of God. I could not get myself sober. Nobody in AA could get me sober. It had to be the grace of God. He gave me the willingness to surrender to this program. And, I mean, this is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I got the opportunity to travel a lot. I came down here in 1988, but I came over to Orlando in 1989. This group was next door in the house there. And this is my home group. As soon as I came to this meeting, I said, boy, this is for me. Because I tried another couple of groups around town, and it just didn't hit me, you know. But Central, I knew they were serious about sobriety here, and I got involved. And after a couple of years, I lost my job here, and I went up to Tallahassee to work. And that was kind of an interesting job, because the company I worked for, I was a camera operator. And one day, I guess I went to the men's room or something, I come back, and there was a big book laying on my desk. What is it? I didn't break my anonymity to anybody up there. You know, why is this here? And I opened it, and all the pages were... Somebody had ripped the binding out. So I went out to my boss and I said, well, what's this book doing here? And he says, we want to reproduce that 72%, make those little small books, you know, pocket jobs. And, the red one came out first. It was some outfit other than Alcoholics Anonymous that printed the book. And I can tell you right now, they used to print them, it used to cost 53 cents to print that book, and they used to give them away. The prisons, detoxes, treatment centers, which I thought was a good idea. But I mentioned at the AA meeting up there, and Jesus, people hit the wall. What do you mean? Somebody else's... So this guy up there that was the more or less the AA guru, he was sober 40 plus years. He grabbed a hold of me and says, get me one of those books, I want to look at it. So when it came off the press, I brought one over to him. He went through it and he says, what the hell's wrong with this? He says, this is the book of alcohol. It was actually only the first 164 pages plus Bob's story. And he says, this gets the book out to more people. So, but about a week later, we got another order to print the little blue book. You know? So they get on the bandwagon too. And it was an interesting job because we used to print the big book in Russian and Poland. And we also used to do those pamphlets, print those pamphlets. But, and I got involved in a group up there. It's what's called the Central Tallahassee Group, 909. If anybody hears from Tallahassee, the same type of group as this. In fact, while I was up there, I saw a guy from this group up there. He was visiting his mother. And that job lasted me maybe 3 years. And they offered me another position in the plant, but I wanted to come back to Orlando. I liked Orlando, so I came back down here and came right back down to Central. And over a period of time, I got a job. I was working nights. I wasn't getting down here that much. And, but I was living out in Biflo with a bunch of AA guys. It was like a little compound out there. There was a bunch of us in Central all living out there. And, I was there, Obie, a few other people. And, Obie, Saturday nights, Obie and I used to make the trek into Central for the meeting. And, the rest of the week, I'd go to a couple of noontime meetings because I couldn't get here in the evening. But, you know, I've met some wonderful people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, but, you know, the literature we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, if you're serious about sobriety, you know, there's some literature that's not even conference approved that I use. When I first came to AA in 65, there was only three books on the table. There was Alcoholics Anonymous, second edition. There was AA Comes of Age, which probably not too many people have read, but it's a great book. And then there was the 12 and 12. And, you know, for the first 17 years of Alcoholics Anonymous, the only way people learned the steps was in the big book. The steps were all right in the big book. And, then 52, they come out with the 12 and 12, and which actually Bill wanted to do because he got him a chance to present the traditions to people. And, you know, traditions are important. They're put in the back of that book for a reason. And, if you decide to start a tradition meeting, you're not going to have a lot of people there. But, you know, it's just the nature of the beast, you know. But, you know, the traditions are what keep us together. You know, we got a singleness of purpose, and we're here for the alcoholic. And Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution for alcoholism. I mean, anybody that's sober in Alcoholics Anonymous knows that. There is definitely a solution here. Once a person gets sober, it's not going to be a free ride. There's going to be bad days, good days. You just work through that stuff. I have some friends back up in the Boston area that I still communicate with. We bounce stuff off each other. And I get this one guy in particular I call. His name is Tom. And, well, Tom and I were both young guys in AA. And it took him about 10 years like me to get sober, but Tom and I one day were sitting at a meeting. I had probably about 9 years of sobriety, and we're sitting in the back of the hall where we always sat, and he turns to me and says, if we're going to stay sober, we got to come to these goddamn meetings the rest of our life. I said, I know. You know, that's the way it is. But, you know, I'll call him up now, and this guy's got close to 40 years now, and I say, what'd you do today? Yeah, I went to a meeting. I said, what'd you do yesterday? I went to a meeting. But, you know, this is where I get my medicine. This is where I keep this guy. If I stay around this guy too long, I'm gone. It's a dangerous place to be, and some crazy stuff goes on up there. You know, this is the only way for me to live a happy, sane life. It's you know, and I've met some wonderful people along the journey of sobriety, and my friend Marty, let me tell you about him. He, after 13 years, this is the guy who saved my life. After 13 years, Marty took a drink. There were circumstances that led up to it, but those were situations. He should never have picked up a drink. But he picked up a drink, and the last night I was in Boston, I went over to Marty's house. He'd been drinking for about 6 months. And had a little talk with him, and I said, well, I'm leaving tomorrow morning to go to Florida. He said, well, good luck. Maybe I'll see you again someday. I never saw him again. He was dead in 6 months. You know? But, it's a shame. Whenever I go up there, I don't go up there too often, but I used to go down to the cemetery and visit his grave, because where would I be if he hadn't dropped by that night? You know? I don't think I would ever have gone back to another AA meeting. It's, you know, if anybody's having trouble getting sober, and let's face it, only half the people who walk through the door get sober right away. The rest of us, in and out, and some of us are lucky enough to make it, some don't. But you know, I didn't ever think I would get sober. I thought I was going to die drunk, and that was my destiny. You know, I had an uncle that died when he was 36 years old from alcoholism. And, they didn't call it that then. The death certificate, they put some other name on there, but that was the bottom line. And I had another uncle that he ended up dying from alcoholism also. But when that judge told me to go to AA, I remember my Uncle Gerald, he went to AA meetings all the time. Every couple of years he'd be drunk, and he'd be drunk for about 2 or 3 weeks, and he'd go somewhere and get well. And so what he was doing was, we have a place called Dropkick Murphy's up in Acton, Mass. And this is before treatment centers became the thing. There were far and few between, but he said, that's how we get off the booze. You go up to Dropkicks, and they had different treatment plans there. And there were Hollywood stars and the TV celebrities and everything that went up there, without mentioning names. But one of the treatment centers, one of the treatments they had was, you go in there, they lock you in the room, and give you all the booze you want, so you beg them not to give you any more. And another one was, they just shut you off cold turkey, and then they had a third method, whatever that was. But when I heard the judge talk to AA, I said, well, that's probably not too bad. You don't drink for a while. And, I didn't have any idea what this was about. But my Uncle Gerald, he did get bits of sobriety here and there. And when I was in prison, he used to come down and see me all the time, put some money in my account. And, he was just a nice guy. And he was sober then. And after I got out, we used to go to meetings together. For some reason, he just drifted off, and I got a call one day. He dropped dead at the hospital, coming off a drunk. You know, he was, his heart gave out. You know, this is a killer. Yeah? If an alcoholic keeps drinking, you plan on dying a long time before you should. And you know, I like life today. I enjoy life. I thought life was something to have endure, but I really enjoy it. And I don't. You know, I don't want to be a superstar. I just want to be. Anybody who knows me I'm kind of laid back. I just want to be. I used to hear this guy up in Boston speak all the time, and he used to put it this way: I don't want to be the first guy in line. I don't want to be the last guy in line. I want to be in the line. You know, that's how I feel about sobriety. You know, I just want to be part of this organization. I want to maintain my sobriety. I used to always have a problem with what was my will. What was God's will for me? And I was sober quite a while before it dawned on me to do 12-step work. You know? And I don't have a good positive record in that. No, I got more failures than. But Bill didn't do too well either his first 6 months. You know, he was losing people. So, you know, I try to help people, and whether they get sober or not, I got no control over that. You know. But it keeps me sober, you know, and that's the name of the game. You know, I want to stay sober, and I know that That's what I have to do. I have to try to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the message of Alcoholics Anonymous is printed in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a lot of trouble with mixing up spirituality with religion. And, you know, this is not a religious program. There's nothing wrong with religion. If you want to go to church, you know, that's up to you. I have a God of my understanding. I don't have to go to church to talk to him. You know, I got a personal relationship. I can plug into him any time of the day, and he's always there. If I didn't have that spiritual attachment to the God of my understanding, I knew I wouldn't have survived around here. I would have drank again, because things have come up over the years that, you know, were kind of terrifying. And I wasn't happy about it. I got to the point when I was over 10 years, I was so unhappy that I wasn't quite sure I wanted to continue living. I was not suicidal. I was more homicidal than suicidal, believe me, but I did not know if, you know, I was having trouble with life. That's what I was having trouble with. Life was kicking my ass. And I remember I was in a subway station in Boston, and I used to stand against the wall, because I said, if I stand in the front there waiting for a train, in a moment of insanity, I'm liable to just jump in front of it. And I kicked that around in my head for a couple days, and I was coming out of work a couple days later, walking down the street, and I seen a bunch of people coming out of this church. It was a Catholic church. I'm an old retired Catholic. You know, I went there when I was a kid and went to parochial school and all that. But I had got away from church for years and years and years. So I went in the church and I went to light a candle. And since the last time I had been to church, they changed the candle lighting procedure. They had electronic things. You press a button, the candle would light. You know, and I'm looking around for matches. I saw some little old lady pushing the button, so I tried it. But anyways, I just sat there and I talked to God. Had a good conversation. I started doing that a couple times a week. After work, I'd go to that church. I never stuck around for the mass or anything. I just go in there and have a little chat, light a candle, and leave. What I got from that was that I was on the edges of AA. You know, I found out that I was hanging on the outside. I had to get back in the middle, so that's what I did. I started going to more big book meetings, more 12-step meetings, and doing more 12-step work, it changed my whole attitude and outlook on life. I had a job up in Boston. These people hired me when I was on work release, and it was a good job, the best job I ever had. I've never made that much money since, but I'm retired now. But I came down here to Florida. I was working for half of what I was getting up there, and I was going to stay there forever. And this is a large company. We had it was in a seven-story building, and we had about 200 employees. And I knew personally five guys who were in the program. We'd get together sometimes and talk if we bumped into each other throughout the plant. This one guy comes down, he was a salesman, and we had worked together before when we were both drinking. He was now sober also. And he said, Bob... I forget his last name. The guy that owned the company says the owner of the company approached him and wanted to do something about all these guys. And he said there was a serious alcohol problem within the plant. So this guy says, can I give him your name so that you can be like a contact person to talk to these guys? He says, before he fires them, if they got a problem, he wants to have him, give him the opportunity to talk to somebody to go to treatment. And I said, okay, but I said, I'm not talking to anybody unless they want to talk to me. I'm not going to, force myself on someone. So, it ended up with a real nice gig, because I could leave work anytime I wanted to with these guys and go to a meeting. And a couple of them got sober. But that company went out of business in 1988, and that's probably come down here to Florida. But, you know, God has been good to me. I have a good life, and it's I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, I just all the answers for me. You know, there's a line on page 42 in the big book. It says all of our problems can be solved through spiritual means, and I believe that. I believe it. You know, I mean, no matter what kind of a problem I have. You know, the thing that's amazing is no matter how hard, how bad the problem is, I have never had a desire to take a drink since I stopped drinking in 75. I've never had a desire. I've had some thoughts that went in here and out here, but there's a big difference between a thought and a desire, you know, because I know I can't drink alcohol. And that's the bottom line. There's no argument there. It's not open for discussion. And I tried every which way. And I sometimes look around and I see people doing the same thing I was doing, and getting the same results, by the way. And, you know, it just will not work unless we surrender to the fact that we're alcoholic and we cannot safely take a drink of alcohol. And if we can do that a day at a time, like the book says, we have a daily reprieve, and it's contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition, we can, this thing will work for us for one day. And you know, I can't think of much more that I can add to this, but it was my pleasure to be here tonight and see a lot of people I haven't seen in a long time, and thanks for asking me, Angel.